Institute on Religious Life has brought you a series of taped lectures by one of today's leading theologians, Father John A. Hardin, S.J. Some of these taped lectures have proved difficult to understand because of surface or tape noise or because of some sort of outside interference. The problem of hearing and understanding is further accentuated when some of the users attempted to play the tapes on loudspeaker systems for the benefit of their communities. For this reason, it has been necessary to retape certain of these lectures to assure clarity of voice and content. In such cases, we have had to resort to a substitute voice, but we assure you that the words spoken and the ideas presented are those of Father John A. Hardin, with nothing added, nothing subtracted. The substitute voice is that of one Robert Warnock. The subject, early training in the religious life. What do we mean by early training in the religious life? We are here addressing ourselves to those who have already entered. Notice we went over the training, and I mean training, of people before they have been admitted, a large and important aspect. Communities should rethink what programs they have or don't have, not just in recruiting, but in training, before we admit the postulant. For the first 1,000 years of the Church's history, most religious vocations came often from young people, often from childhood, who lived on the grounds in the company of religious. Thomas Aquinas lived with the Benedictines from the age of 5. So let's have the common sense to realize in today's secular Western society, either these young people must be given training before they enter religious life, or your postulants and novitiates will be reduced to programs of emotional therapy. Where we got the idea, in of all ages, one like our own, that God will work miracles by developing chosen souls, and all we have to do is pluck the rose and bring it pure and fresh and sweet into the religious life. Really, we should know better. People need training long before they enter, and vocations will come because those who have vocations given by Almighty God will be discovered under the very process of training. This is not our current subject, but we must give this serious thought. Sodalities or other groups of whatever kind we can think of, in whatever ways in which, though we cannot segregate them from the world in which they are living, we can give these potential postulants a chance to develop the first signs of a religious vocation long before they come. Now, the subject, early training in the religious life. Not before, but in, once they have entered. First, its importance. We cannot exaggerate the importance of this early training. It's not just something the Church has always done. It's something our faith tells us is necessary, because, as I like to put it, we assume that a person in the natural physical order goes through the stages of infancy, childhood, adolescence, and adulthood. And although we cannot press the analogy too far, the analogy is a valid one. there is such a thing as the first babbling of a child in the spiritual life, even though her chronological age is 22. What I am saying might be slightly exaggerated. What I'm saying is that the supernatural life has its analogy in the natural life. Therefore, we should expect to begin with people who need, sometimes need, infantile assistance. And one of the hardest things to distinguish between is the obvious natural ability of intelligence that a person has and what may be a notorious immaturity in the spiritual life. One reason, by the way, that psychological tests aren't much good is because they do not one of them, they do not take stock of the supernatural dimension, the role of grace, the place of faith. So its importance is to be assumed. But do not begin by assuming that the person who comes to you does not need training. Secondly, the emphasis is distinction. We must distinguish between the kind of training each person needs. There are certain bread and butter things which a young religious needs to be trained in. But frankly, these things, such as rules, are not all that hard to acquire. After all, they become almost routine, provided there is goodwill and enough intelligence to know what the person is supposed to do. The training that I am especially addressing myself to is the training of the individual as an individual. And we've got to distinguish between A and B and C. The training that A requires, B may not need. The training that B needs in some area, A may not need. I would therefore say that I don't know for how long, because it depends on who you've got. But I would say you cannot spend too much time at the beginning. It is a matter of weeks, or perhaps even months, before you begin to tell the person what they should do. Spend all the time you've got to find out who you are dealing with. The knowledge of the individual to be trained is indispensable. And I have found in my 30-plus years in the priesthood, that women are slow to reveal themselves, and this by comparison with men. Very often, the more they say, the more they talk, the less they say. Some are, well, I have listened to a sister for quite a few hours, allegedly manifesting herself, but she was not manifesting herself, not at all, but was saying, so she thought, what I wanted to hear, or what would make her look better in my eyes. It is very difficult for most people to truly reveal themselves. It is not so much a matter of bad will. And this is where, in early training, if you're going to know whom you are training, you must discover a way and means, an effective way, of evoking or having them make spontaneous responses of what is on their minds and what is in their hearts, even to diagnose the problem. All you can deal with in the spirit is symptoms. We cannot see the soul like we can see the body. We cannot see an ulcer or lesions. You cannot measure blood pressure or temperature as with those things that are in the physical. There are no sensible, perceptible ways of measuring the spiritual. All of it is symptomatic. And this is where I recommend keeping notes. Write down those things. Have a log for each person. Now, not an hour's worth of writing on each person, some jottings. And don't pull out your notes when speaking to that person. Use your head. Don't take notes while the person is speaking. Never record. Don't have a tape recorder in evidence. But these notes, which you jot down at a later time, are useful to call to memory for your next meeting with that person, for knowing how to deal with that individual. Now, I distinguish training from education. Training is not instruction. It's not doctrinal foundation or education. There must be some ideas in training people, too. Training is mainly of the will and the emotions. Why do people need training? Because all people, even the holiest, have a weak, fallen, or as I like to say, falling human nature. The church has solemnly defined that since the fallen Adam, even though we are in God's friendship, the state of grace, still we have tendencies in us that lead us to sin. And here I would especially recommend certain parts of the spiritual exercises of Saint Ignatius. There are particularly two which you might call meditations, and in my commentary on these called All My Liberty, I have a chapter on each. The first is the three classes of men, and the second, the three degrees or modes of humility. Training of the young religious is especially in training them first to find out what problems they have, to what creatures are they inordinately attached. If you don't do that, then all your exhortations will be lost. Each person must be trained to discover and cope with his or her fallen nature, fallen human nature. And each of us is different. One is prone to pride, another to unchastity, another to laziness, another to envy. And there are subtle combinations of each. So to train the persons in coping with their inordinate attachments, you have to realize that some have a strong, affective temperament. Some have trouble with disorderly friendships. They will latch on to people. They may latch on to you. And it is one thing to tell a person what to do when they are standing over there, and it is another thing to tell a person what to do when they embrace you, either physically or at least psychologically. the warmer people are, the more they will have difficulty in sacrificing their affections. In any case, that's the first. Training in controlling their affections, which in everyone, in different ways, are not under control. The second is training in generosity. So there are two kinds of training, and this is summarizing. One training in coping with our fallen human nature with its sinfully prone tendencies, and training in generosity. Training in the one or the other without balancing the two kinds of training can develop a lopsided religious. It is not enough to train the person in generosity, in love, unless they are also trained in coping with their fallen nature. On the other hand, training only in coping with the fallen nature, you may develop religious stoics who have total self-mastery, but there is little or no love. And training mainly of the will and affections. This is the important thing. If there is one thing that religious need in being trained, it is to recognize the importance of watching their thoughts. The divinely ordained logic of training in character begins with thoughts in the mind. And depending on the kind of thoughts we have, we shall have desires accordingly. There is nothing that we ever desire unless that has not been first a thought in our minds. There is no controlling desires unless we have first learned to control the mind. Desires lead to actions. And just as we desire nothing unless we have first had it on our minds, so we never do anything unless we first desire it. Every thought tends to become a desire. Every desire tends to become an action. Now, actions are not yet what we are talking about. Isolated actions are one thing. Habits are something else. And just as every thought tends to become a desire, every desire tends to become an action, so every action, just because I have performed it, tends to become a habit. I shall never cultivate a good habit unless I have, no matter what it costs me, performed good actions. And in time, the sheer repetition will induce the habit. If the actions are good, I develop a virtue. If the actions are bad, I develop a vice. And finally, depending on the person's habit, he or she has shaped their character. Character is mainly the result of each religious having from their earliest days in the religious learned not just the importance, but the indispensability of each of these steps, beginning with this. This is another reason why I don't think it would be wise to prematurely expose religious to ideas. Because what we see, we immediately get ideas. And they will have enough problems without exposing them to more than they are able to cope with. And in time, once they have developed good habits and a strong character, please God, they will be able to cope with the most scandalous conditions. This concludes Father Hardin's talk on early training in the religious life.
run your tape out to the end and reverse the tape for Father Hardin's talk on emotional problems in the young religious.